This is an opera cast from English National Opera. For more information and to book tickets, visit www.eno.org.
I actually feel like I've grown up in tandem, my opera going, with your career, Catherine, because, you know, I kind of, when I was started writing about opera, you know, you were there. And it's extraordinary now you're doing more directing and such like. Tomorrow is the big day of the Sitzprobe by GABA, the day when the orchestra and cast finally collide, I suppose.
Yes, well, it's their first sessions, and I'm sure that the big days are going to be when they're doing it on the stage, of course, because I think none of them are that happy about the Sitzprobe in the hall, because acoustically it's not ideal.
Right.
Sitzprobes never are. I remember doing Sitzprobes at the Met in the basement room, sea level, as we call it, sea as in Catherine, but sea level. And it was never really wonderful, those Sitzprobes. It is more like a collision, actually. Collision of sounds.
Yeah.
You need the theatre to make sense of it.
Sure. I mean, your Tosca reached the biggest audience of any Tosca in the history of the role, didn't it, when you did that 1992 Emmy Award-winning TV live?
I mean, feel blessed to have had that experience. First of all, it was my first Tosca. I never did Tosca on the stage prior to that.
I didn't realize
that. Yeah, and so that already in itself was extraordinary. And probably says a lot about me, but I loved that experience because it was on the edge, the whole experience, you know. And I think my happiest experiences in the career were always on the edge a little bit, you know, that there was some inherent risk about it.
That was actually shot in the actual Roman locations.
That's correct.
At the appropriate times of day.
The times that Puccini cites in the score.
It's like the operatic forerunner of 24 or something.
That's right, exactly.
But the pressure must have been unbelievable.
Yeah, but you know, you embrace it as actually, you could look at it as pressure, or you can also look at it as the most exciting project possible, and that really creates a sort of frisson in your soul about, my God, I'm doing something live and dangerous, very risky, and that's kind of makes it more exciting and more enjoyable.
Well, I've always seen you as a risky performer from the very, but you were at the vanguard of singers who did take those risks and looked good on stage as well, because that was, you know, that was by no means the norm at that time, was it?
I think, well, there always are singers who probably pull together both sides, the acting and the singing, and did it well. I think probably there is more focus on that these days, and people are demanding it more and more, I suppose.
Mm.
But I took a little issue with the word risk-taking, because while I love risk-taking, I also employ risk-taking in preparation. In other words, it's not an entirely risky thing, because you have practiced to create that possibility of risk.
Yes.
What do we really mean by risk? I think it's much more about making it feel as though it's happening in that moment for the first time.
Yes, because you can only take risks when you're completely on top of the material.
That's the secret. But you have to practice as you're going to perform.
Yes.
And that's part of it. You know, if you don't practice that ever, then you are taking a very, very scary risk that might not come out well. You know, so most risks are geared to come out well.
I imagine that directing Tosca with your young star, Amanda Echelas, that you're creating the kind of production that you would feel comfortable in and you would feel.
That's,
I mean,
so
is that true?
Yes, that's true. I mean, but I think it's a vantage point that is very much informed from that film, too, because there's something about having done that film first, and then I did it in the theater subsequently. And I must say that I missed a lot of elements from that live experience. Perhaps the most startling was the feeling of what it felt like to be on the rooftop of the Castel Sant'Angelo, faced with the sky and the universe out there, and the what Puccini calls the vuoto at the end of the piece, that she jumps into the void. And for me, that sense, it never was apparent in the performances I did in the theater. I think I can say quite comfortably that Amanda and Julian Gavin, Amanda Echeloff and Julian Gavin, when they're on our rooftop of the third act and they see the universe that we've created, that they do feel that sense of euphoria and excitement and danger up there. Yeah. And that was something that I really brought along from that experience, yeah, and wanted to see actually take root in our design of Tosca.
It's always about bringing things from your experiences, isn't it? And that was a particularly extraordinary and unusual experience.
That was an unusual experience. That wasn't like any other experience. No. But to answer your question more specifically, yes, I think I'm bringing to all of them in the cast the sense of our not trying to be comfortable. In other words, I think part of what's inherent in so-called risk-taking performing is the wish not to be look or seem comfortable, even though you might be, yeah, but you don't want to seem to be, because then that doesn't have the whiff of that whiff of comfortability. It feels stagnant in some way. It doesn't feel of the moment. Doesn't feel fresh. Doesn't feel spontaneous. In other words, the way we practice and the way we rehearse, it's so easy to become routined, you know, and that's something we don't want to seem to be in the theatre.
How hard is it when it's a role that you have played as much as you have to not to bring that performance to the rehearsal, if you like?
I don't bring my performances to the rehearsal as a director. I have to say, I have been. It's interesting. That question comes up a great deal. So it's a little stereotypical, actually, in terms of thinking of the singer like myself who wants to direct, that I'm doing this as a kind of extension of my singing life. No. Actually, not. Mm. I'm doing this because I feel I have so much to offer in terms of telling a story. I did do that as a singer, but I wasn't responsible for the whole frame of storytelling. I could only be responsible for my part in that big frame. Now I get to really create the frame of storytelling, and I love it. Because I've always been, even as a singer, I was always curious about what the director was doing, what the designers were doing, and how it all came together. So I was not myopic like those horses with the blinders on them. I always looked to the right and the left and everywhere to see what was going on to make this magic happen. And that fascinated me ever since I began theater life. And this came really out of many circumstances, teaching being one of them. 12 years ago, I began teaching whilst I was in the midst of a very thriving career. And then the whole idea of directing also started to take root at that time, because I started to work with singers a great deal in terms of bringing together the singing and acting art, and how to develop oneself so that you are not always inside a comfortable box, but you really push the boundaries of your artistic life. And as a result of that, I started to develop exercises and explorations for singers that were so interesting and random and dramatic that I realized, this is something I really enjoy doing on the moment. you know, seeing what a singer needs and then creating a whole set of exercises or explorations or theater games, as you might call it, to actually give them the experience of being a bit more risk-taking or a bit more random or trying something that is the opposite of what they normally do. Mm-hmm. And in that exploration, I started to realize, well, I'm doing something that is really the domain of a director, really. And the way I worked with directors myself, where I, people like David Alden, for instance, and Chereau and Luc Bondy or Jean-Pierre Ponel, all these great directors that I worked with, I either had this highly articulate dialogue with, or I just got what they were looking for. You know, that the extrasensory parts of me were tuned in. And so trying to develop that sense in artists myself, or to be articulate with them, but not sort of dampen their contribution, is something of an art in itself.
Well, I guess you have to use a bit of psychology, because different performers bring very different things to the table.
Absolutely.
And so the early part of the rehearsal period, is that the exploration time when you kind of look and see where they might be going and where you might take them?
Yes, that's part of it, although unfortunately no rehearsal period is long enough to do that kind of work.
Yeah.
But you do attempt to give that atmosphere, what is really what I call a safe atmosphere of exploration and a nurturing atmosphere where everybody works very much as a team to support the possibility of finding these possibilities. I have very distinct ideas of where I'm taking them, but I want them to feel as though they're contributing to. I ask a lot of questions. We have a lot of dialogue. That period in the beginning where we talk and dialogue, and they get to speak about how they feel about the characters and so forth, terribly important for them, and to share that with each other and with me. Opens up the possibilities of telling the story as a unity, because we need to tell the story as a unity, and that's my job to sort of guide that journey. So we all tell the same tale. A production that doesn't have that unity isn't really a good storytelling production.
I guess in opera there are also lots of extraneous influences, and in a role like Tosca, for example, the callous influence where, you know, as I've heard over the years, I mean, some of the line readings even they won't go away.
That's the problem. It's all
stale.
In the ether. We have all of these influences, and we really every time have to be challenged and challenge ourselves to keep looking at the score with fresh eyes, just the way Callas used to say that herself in her interviews. She always talked about the idea that you look at the score, look to the composer for your inspiration, and I do exactly that as a director, as I did when I was a singer. I look to the score, listen to the music deeply, and you really do hear the subtext, and the situations are really there in the text, in the music, and then with a little bit of imagination and creativity added to that mix, well, it's not so difficult because it's already there. A lot of it is already there.
What are the most challenging aspects of this piece to convey in a production, do you think?
Several things. I think, as I said, that whiff of comfortability kills me every time. If I feel as though the relationship between Cavaradossi and Tosca is so old hat that they seem like a married couple already. I hate it. I want to believe that this is a young relationship, you know, passionate, very sexy, and turbulent as well. But with a great sense of deep passion and love inside of it. That's something I hardly ever get in the relationship between Cavaradossi and Tosca. I also think that it's challenging to create a cover of Dossi story that is convincing as the Tosca story and the Scarpia story, because he's often, you know, a nice third, but he's not an equal sometimes. Mm. And what I love about Cavaradossi is that he's a true hero.
Mm.
He's really a heroic being. And in one moment in the first act, he makes a rash decision to throw all caution to the winds, and also to throw his relationship to the winds, too, because it doesn't include Tosca, which is a kind of his vulnerable Achilles heel, that he didn't inform Tosca. He says, I don't choose to tell Tosca because she tells her father, confessor, everything. Yes, but that was a mistake. That was truly a mistake on his part. And that's beautiful because it's human. It's the moment of his vulnerability. Mm. But what is fabulous is the fact that he has this moment to decide, what do I do with this man called Angelotti in front of me? Do I help him or do I just stay out of it? No, he does what every hero does. He jumps in, not thinking about his safety, not thinking about how this could change his relationship with Tosca, etc., etc., etc. And that makes him something bigger than life. And Tosca, what fascinates me about her is not the diva part of it at all, because the diva part of it is frankly always put in the wings by Puccini himself, the cantatas in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Her reference to the performance this evening before she knows that she has to do the cantata for the queen is also something that will happen tonight, Mario. But after that, and she makes very little of that. I have to sing tonight, but let's go to the villa afterwards.
Yeah, I guess it's easy to make something like Bicidate, for example.
The diva thing?
A turn.
And it's not.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, in our production, I've done something that I hope will be understood as a parenthesis, but not undramatic. In other words, it isn't a diva turn. It's one of those filmic, I mean, in a way, Puccini already was a film master in a way, in the way he created drama. That moment of Vicidante is like a close-up, or a moment of hearing her thoughts and no one else hears it. And it's a blink in film terms. It's not as long as it is in the opera.
Another aspect of the piece that always interests me, Catherine, is the Scarpia Tosca relationship in Act Two. I mean, again, it's too easy to turn it into, you know, arch villain bearing down on this vulnerable woman.
I agree.
Is there a fascination in her fame in any way beyond a loathing, or is there a fascination
for her towards him?
Frisson?
Yeah, that question has been asked in a very much more blunt way. I have to say, people have often asked me, "Is there an attraction there?" And I have to say, I always said no. She does loathe him. She hates him desperately. What is maybe a frisson is probably a better way to say it, because what fascinates me about the whole second act, you know, Tosca is a woman of the theater, so she's used to scores and scripts and such things. So, you know, performers tend to want to dominate their scripts and be in control of their evening of performance and so on. Here she is walking into a situation where she's been specifically instructed by Mario, don't say a thing or else I'm dead. And so she's got to try to hold that in, that information. And she knows that he's right. But here it is, a situation where she has no experience with, because she's an innocent and she comes from a background, as we know from the play, that she was an orphan child and all of that. So she's not as clever as she is as a diva in the world of music. As a person, she's rather an innocent in many ways, and vulnerable in many ways. That jealousy is a vulnerability thing for her. So here she is in a situation where we have a master script maker, Scarpia, who's calling all the shots, you know, and really handling everyone like a puppet master. And suddenly she doesn't know what the correct lines should be in the script, which is maybe there's a moment where that challenge to find the right way to, you know, collide, fight, you know, try to figure out a way to outsmart Scarpia is a frisson in the air. That is the frisson. Mm. But as far as an attraction to that man, I cannot see why. What he, everything he is or does is repugnant to everything in her being. And she's, the other issue here for me, again, is the reason people say that is because Cavaradossi is not ever interesting enough. And she's, and her, the love that she has for Cavaradossi isn't shown strongly enough that we would even venture to ask that, because Scarpia, of course, seems so fascinating. Well, we all love evil people. We love to love the devil in the piece. But no, and I think what's fascinating is to see that someone like a Scarpia, who seems to have ultimate control in all situations, does not second-guess this woman correctly, that he allows himself to be in that room alone with her and does not realize where he's pushed her to. In other words, he doesn't see where the storyline is going and how this woman, so passionately in love, that she will protect her lover.
Because he's used to being in control, isn't he?
He's used to it.
People's vulnerability excites.
And he also thinks that a woman has no ability to overpower a man like himself. But, and out of sheer rage, she finds that power to do something that is against every fiber in her being. But she finds it. And I love that, because I think we can all relate to it and identify that there are certain things in life that we would do the same. We would do the same if anyone threatened our children, our loved ones, you know. We would kill, probably.
I've read with interest some of your comments on another signature role of yours, Zalome.
Yes.
I mean, really interesting observations about that character and where she was coming from. I mean, the range of roles you've played in your career, I mean, it's just astonishing. I mean, in every kind of genre, from bel canto to dramatic lyric to contemporary scores, and this and they are there. And now, of course, you're moving on to the terrific character roles like the Kostelnischka.
I have. And I don't consider myself an opera singer anymore, by the way. Just to
you could have fooled me in that performance.
Well, no. Well, that's already 3 years ago. Up until 2 years ago, I was still singing, but I'm not singing any longer. I mean, I can if I wanted to, but I really now call myself an opera director and teacher, because teaching is a really big part of my life and goes very well hand in hand with directing, I must say. What is it about, really? It's about the fact that, well, first of all, at a certain point, every opera singer has to face the end of a career of singing because, well, several reasons. You can't compete with yourself. So you can keep creating, and I did a great deal of that, recreating myself in the last years. But it's also at a certain point where you realize there's such an energy to create, and I have an energy to create now that goes way beyond performing, that this directing life fulfills me deeply on so many levels of creative energy. To be frank, it's the kind of life that is tailor-made for my huge amount of energy, because as a singer, you're always asked to conserve. You have to conserve. You have to keep quiet. You have to, you know, rest. You can't do anything on a day of performance and all of this. And I always found that I had such energy to burn, which I brought to my performances, but it's like I need to do more. And the most important aspect of all of this is that I feel like I've been blessed with the most glorious career for decades, you know, almost four decades worth. And I've done almost every role imaginable that I could do. Yes, or a few I missed doing, but so what? I did a lot. And at a certain point, you realize, too, that you have to give back something, you know? I was given a lot, but it's now my turn to give back.